Indiana Republicans pass a near-total abortion ban. Eli Lilly and Cummins weigh in on the ban after it became law, plus a massive federal climate, health care, and tax bill, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 12, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Indiana Republican lawmakers voted late last Friday to force thousands more people to give birth every year in a state with some of the worst maternal and infant mortality rates in the country.
Abortions would only be allowed if the pregnant person's serious health or life is at risk, if there's a lethal fetal anomaly up to 20 weeks, and in cases of rape or incest, but only up to 10 weeks. Republican Senator Liz Brown says the ban is the culmination of years of battles.
We will always have more work to do because we need to make it unimaginable to end an unborn baby's life.
Democratic Senator Shelley Yoder says women shouldn't have to ask for control over their own bodies.
It's not compassionate. It's not pro-life. It's pro-punishment. Punishment of women who dare to live as freely as men.
Governor Eric Holcomb quickly signed the bill.
What is the fallout from the abortion ban? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Indiana voters have sent Republican supermajorities to the State House for nearly a decade. Isn't this what they wanted?
Oh, I don't think this is what they wanted. And they knew they were sending Republicans to the State House. They didn't know they were sending cruel people to the State House. They didn't even want to take a non-binding referendum to find out what voters wanted because they were afraid of what happened in Kansas, which is not as progressive a state, I hope, as Indiana. What they did here, they had 49 people in the House caucus, 49 Republicans, say that that 10-year-old should have been forced to carry the
39.
Offspring.
39. 39 people voted for
Oh, it was only 39?
39.
39. It was 49.
But it's
okay.
More than half of them.
More than half of them said that she should be forced to carry that child to term and then be cut open because at age 10 you can't deliver vaginally. So that's their idea of what their religion demands, and they want to make everyone else do that. And they did it so quickly that they didn't even think through what they were doing. I don't mean in terms of the limitations and all. She probably, you know, a child that age may not even know she's pregnant by 10 weeks. But that issue aside, they didn't repeal any of the other dumb ideological laws they passed. She's going to have to make two visits. She's going to have ultrasound. She's going to have to be lied to and told that the fetus can feel pain. She's going to be lied to and told that there's a pill she can take to reverse the abortion, and on and on and on. That's how poorly drafted and how poorly thought out and how quickly they rush to judgment. And they don't care what voters think. So I think everybody out there voting should take a page out of Todd Houston's book. He said, if you don't like what we did, vote us out. And that's what's going to happen in part this November.
In the Senate floor debate over that amendment to take out the rape and incest exception, Senator Mike Gaskell, who voted to take out the exceptions, said on the floor, like, some of us may lose our seats for this vote. Do you think he's right? Do you think there will be electoral consequences for Republicans over this bill?
We'll see. I think, well, in part, I mean, this came late, and Democrats, you know, characteristically don't have their act together and had no candidates ready to run and have very incomplete. You know, there's just not a lot of competitive races around the state that are well organized and well funded. So we'll see, though. I mean, Kansas, that was a surprise outcome in Kansas, right? That's what brought, you know, that's what encouraged Democrats to bring that amendment to try to, you know, derail this and go to referendum. And, you know, I think Kansas thought that this is a no-brainer. We're restricting abortion, right? And that obviously turned out not to be the case. And something is going to be just like Barack Obama and health care reform was a catalyst for Southern Indiana Democrats to finally start consistently voting Republican, there could be a catalyst that moves some of these voters, or certainly in the middle or in the suburban moderates, could move them around. So I don't want to sleep on that theory politically. What was interesting in this debate in Indiana was the, you know, first experiment in a red state talking about this was you, with all the states that had trigger laws, that was just a mindless political vote, right? It didn't matter. Roe was in the background. What changed And what Indiana proved and showed is that this is a hell of a lot more nuanced than just voting for a trigger law when Roe v. 2 years ago, and it's a political vote, and it's scored by, you know, your state's right to life lobby, you know. This was theoretical. I mean, you had, it was theoretical,
no
and now it's not, right? So they had to pay very close attention to what they were doing.
Yeah, Abdul Hakim Shabazz has been fond of using the analogy the last few weeks of the dog chasing the car. It caught the car, and now it doesn't know what to do.
Right. So they had to think through a lot of these things. They didn't really think through before. I think they really did. There were hundreds of amendments. I mean, these guys were all over the board.
What about all the other hurdles?
I want to ask about this aspect of it. I want to talk about this aspect of it too. Nobody tested or testified in support of this law. No one. Not a single human being honestly testified in support of SB1. Over 6.5 hours and 61 people in the Senate, and over 8 hours or 7 hours and more than 100 people in the House. No one. Because obviously abortion rights advocates didn't like the law at all. And anti-abortion activists said it didn't go far enough. They want the rape and incest exceptions taken out, as an example. Is this debate over? Does this put an end to it here in Indiana?
I don't think it's over. And in fact, in terms of the political fallout, I think it is difficult to say, will there be dramatic change in the numbers, the breakdown politically in the House and the Senate, say this coming fall. But I think what we can say with certainty, and we're not talking about who's right morally and who's wrong. I'm talking about the politics, okay? This is the high water mark for those who have opposed Roe v. Wade and wanted tight restrictions. It doesn't get any better than this for them politically, because from now on, what gets attention? A baby who in the past might not have been born is now born and everybody's happy. Is that going to get any coverage? No, just by definition, no. The plane didn't crash.
Right.
The plane, you know. But is there another 10-year-old, a 9-year-old? Is there? What about the woman who sought an illegal abortion or tried to do it herself and botched it and died a very painful death? What about, you know, the person, this horrifying, you know, assault that, and granted, there are exceptions, but maybe somebody's not in the window of the, you know, doesn't meet all the criteria and have the affidavit notarized and signed properly and is still the victim of incest or rape. I can see a million stories reminding people that this is perhaps cruel and draconian and not in the best interest of women, and there's no flip side to it. So we can debate about what erosion there will be in Republican support, but I think even Republicans have to admit, this is as good as it gets for them. They only erode from here on that issue.
To the question I asked Mike about will there be fallout, when we spoke to House Democratic Leader Phil Giaquinta and Cherish Pryor on the day the bill passed in the House, I think I was the one who asked the question, like, you know what the maps look like as well as I do. Is there any reason to think that you will actually have wins off of this? And the answer came back, we don't think we're going to get a majority. Nobody thinks that. But they think they can break the supermajority in the House. Are they right?
They'd have to flip 4 or 5 races. That might be a little high for one cycle, especially, and Mike is right, a lot of those races don't even have a competitor, like, you know.
Or at least a realistic competitor,
right.
Even if there's a name on the ballot.
But a lot of them have vacancies
on
the ballot.
Yeah, that too.
So maybe at this time period, that might be a little, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple seats flipped. People are pretty motivated about this right now, and they were still outside the state house with the megaphone just yesterday, you know, on this issue. So we'll see how it goes.
Right. I have had more people talk to me about this, not political people, but just people saying, why? Why couldn't we be at least as progressive as Mississippi? You know, I mean, Mississippi.
The 15-week ban.
I don't think, you know, short attention spans usually would drive attention
not
elsewhere.
On this
but
issue.
On this issue, for the reasons I just mentioned. You know, you don't know you have a concern until you have a concern, and all of a sudden you have a relative who is sick or died or finds herself in that situation.
How deep that was on our side politically. I mean, that's why plenty of like Christian conservatives held their nose for Donald Trump and said, "No, we need him in there for the Supreme Court." Right?
They got what they wanted.
All the other damage.
They got what they wanted. Well, so let's stay on topic. The morning after Governor Eric Holcomb signed a near-total abortion ban into law, one of the state's largest employers said the new restrictions will hinder its ability to attract talent. WFYI's Dylan Piers McCoy reports.
Pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly says Indiana's new abortion ban will make it harder to recruit talent to the state. Lilly issued a statement after Republican Governor Eric Holcomb signed the bill into law. Because of the new law, Lilly says it will be forced to plan for employment growth outside of Indiana. Lilly is headquartered in Indianapolis, where it employs over 10,000 people. Lilly also says it will pay for Indiana employees to travel out of state for abortions.
Power technology corporation Cummins also sent out a statement after the ban was passed, saying the law will play a factor as the company focuses on communities that, quote, align with our values. Mike O'Brien, would these sort of statements have made any impact if they came before lawmakers voted?
Maybe. We don't know, right? I think they were talking behind the scenes. They certainly weren't being public. But think about the dynamic that we had this session. So you had Indiana Rights of Life staked out this far-right extreme position to begin with that very few people supported, and they wound up having to come off of it and completely change. And then they wound up just supporting whatever was left at the end of the day, right? Because they just a safe face. You have that on the right. On the left, you've got ACLU, Planned Parenthood. So basically what legislators did was they looked at both of those groups and kicked them out of the room because they're like, whatever you're telling us, we're not doing. And they had to figure it out on their own. So what they crafted was what the caucuses generally could support and what they could get a majority for. Remember, this didn't pass by like an overwhelming majority.
In the House, it was a little more comfortable than the Senate, but the Senate, the final bill was 3 votes because you need 26. And
it was watered down even more in the... You know, in the House, you had 26 in the first half in the Senate and 29 in the second half. You know, so you weren't throwing huge majorities against this that were like impenetrable. So you bring some interest groups. You know, Dave Ricks sitting at the table. Maybe that changes it because the extreme lobbies and forces that were normally a part of that conversation were gone. Because what they were trying was unacceptable. So maybe another set of voices in the middle of that would have mattered.
We've heard some reports that Lilly, at least, I don't know about Cummins, were talking at least, or at least sent information to lawmakers, at least legislative leaders, during the process. Is that as effective as saying something publicly that Hoosiers can hear?
They don't care. Okay? They don't care what the voters want. They don't care what the industry leaders want. They don't care whether it costs us jobs or expansion for Lilly or Cummins. They don't care. Okay? All they want is to force their religion down everybody's throat. And they had the opportunity to do that, and they weren't going to pass it up. And it's as clear as the nose on your face. They don't care about the future of Indiana. They don't care about the voters of Indiana. I hope they don't care if they lose their seats, because I'd like to see it happen.
Some of them clearly said they don't care if they lose their
seats
over those
votes.
Let's
see if they mean it.
We just talked in the previous topic about this debate is not over. Clearly the Right to Life group will try and push for fewer exceptions, probably starting in January. As that debate plays out going forward, will these untimely statements from Eli Lilly and Cummins make an impact then?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we still, you got to figure in January, we're going to have lots of discussion on birth control. We're going to have lots of discussion on the medication inducing abortions and crossing state lines and things like that. I do think it's fair to say, like, yes, let's say Lilly and Cummins told them behind the scenes. Okay. But that is different than saying it publicly, because if Lilly and Cummins do it, then maybe Salesforce does it. Then Salesforce does it, then maybe, you know, there becomes like a snowball effect.
We saw that with RFRA. Very
clearly. Totally. And so by them completely staying out of it, I mean, I don't understand the strategy. I'd love to have someone honest to God explain it to me on why they did it that way.
Well, speaking of that, there has been a theory that some people have pushed that Eli Lilly and Cummins, who had given money to a lot of the lawmakers who voted for the abortion ban, well, at least Eli Lilly has, they don't really care about the bill being passed. And that their criticism comes from a place of they were already worried about Indiana's ability to attract and develop a workforce that they need. And so this is just a convenient excuse for them to say, well, this ban is terrible and now we're going to look elsewhere, when they were always going to do that regardless. Do you think there's any truth to
what
that?
What a cynical approach.
I was
going to
say,
look up cynical in the dictionary.
We're sitting here May talking about Lilly's.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yes, but that is very cynical. I assume what happened here
And yes, you're right. There is always a concern about being able to attract the best and brightest in a state that hasn't necessarily consistently produced the best and brightest. However,
you want to retract that statement? They may not have consistently produced or retained. I'll stand by my statement.
All right,
thank you.
I'll
stick with that, counselor. But so yeah, that's maybe a consideration. But I don't. That's awful. That's not just three levels chess. That's like blindfolded behind your back kind of chess, or maybe Chinese checkers in different directions, because what I presume is happening here, there was a notion that on such a volatile issue like this, there's a reluctance to be seen as backing people into a corner. We already have a lawmakers who are sensitive to the notion that they are fighting, they're oppressed anyway by, you know, government, the deep state, the elite corporate titans, you know, everybody's evil.
Big in Indiana.
Well, the point is, maybe if you're Lily, maybe you're saying, I don't want to force them into a situation where they're appearing to crumble to the man, the big powerful man, and maybe we can try to accomplish it behind the scenes. I don't know. I too would love to know. I would certainly, as somebody who's interested in the long-term fortunes of the state, I hope it's my interpretation and not the notion that some sinister notion that this is a way we can get out of Dodge and
have
more graceful exit.
They've tried and failed in other areas.
Yes, they have.
They have tried to engage in these kind of social.
I mean, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce has a lot of success at the State House, and they still have a lot of success at the State House. The last few years, as they've gotten most of the sort of tax and stuff that they've been fighting for, they've been pushing a little more on more social, quote unquote, issues, even like smoking things and that.
And they haven't gotten anywhere.
Zero success.
Yeah, and that was a much broader coalition than this.
Let me ask this on Eli Lilly and Cummings, particularly Lilly, who came out the morning after. Is perhaps some of this a result of they didn't think the governor was going to sign the bill as quickly as he did? They thought maybe they'd have a little more time to get a statement out?
I don't think there was any reason to expect that he would veto the bill. Yeah. I mean, he gave no indications of that whatsoever. He gave no indications, period.
He
signed every other abortion bill.
But again, just as we talked about before, this is not the end of it. I think this is... We'll never see more stringent restrictions.
It's going to come back the other way around.
We'll see a loosening, I think. Because of the cover and the developments. That's my take anyway.
I made a bet with Ann a few weeks ago that I lost, and I wouldn't make another bet with Ann over whether or not we're going to see looser restrictions, because I would expect them to tighten, if anything.
Well, it's on the time frame
of the bet.
I don't
think they will tighten.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, does Eli Lilly's criticism of Indiana's abortion ban have any practical effect? A yes or B no. Last week, we asked you if Hoosiers will be happy with the $200 inflation relief checks that lawmakers passed. Just 25% say yes, 75% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, after months of negotiations, Senate Democrats this week passed a major climate, health care, and tax bill, a centerpiece of President Biden's agenda. Vice President Kamala Harris broke the 50-50 tie.
The spending bill attempts to tackle climate change, the high cost of prescription drugs, and lower the deficit by roughly $300 billion. Democrats have argued the measure will tackle voters' main economic concern, naming it the Inflation Reduction Act. Republicans argue the new spending will aggravate inflation. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says, though, the bill has a negligible effect on inflation in 2022 and into 2023. Overall, the bill is a very scaled-down solution to what many Democrats, including President Biden, had asked for originally. Both of Indiana's U.S. senators voted against it, with Todd Young calling it reckless and the absolute wrong approach to helping Hoosier families. But both Young and Mike Braun also voted to take out of the bill a $35 monthly cap on insulin prices.
Nikki Kelly, will that insulin cap vote hurt Young or Braun?
I mean, probably not immediately. Young clearly has a hold on his race this year, but it is an issue that will resonate with people. I mean, it's super easy to understand. And so, you know, there's no complicated factors or anything like that. And so people just see, you know, their family and their friends paying insane amounts of money for an established drug. Like, we're not talking a new drug that took 20 years to get to the market and they're recouping. You know, this is all pure greedy profit. And so, you know, it's easy for them to understand. So you might lose a few votes, but I mean.
And even Eli Lilly, speaking of Eli Lilly, came out and said we supported the $35.
Correct.
Cap.
They had to.
Although
come
it's easy to say that when it didn't get passed.
The morning after.
Yeah. The morning after. But.
Well, I just want to be clear, though. I mean, the $35 cap did pass for Medicare, but not for private insurance.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
Just
right.
And
Todd Young said on this that he thought the $35 cap was an arbitrary price that, and he wanted billions of dollars to help people who particularly needed it get free access to insulin on a regular basis. That's laudable, but again, to Nikki's point, are people going to hear that argument?
No, because you're right. There is a school of thought that I think Todd Young falls into this group, that it's not government's place to regulate pricing. I mean, that's why we have an open market. And if their demand goes down, presumably the price would go down.
How do you have the demand go down for a drug that keeps you alive?
Well, maybe you don't. Maybe
well,
you don't.
They all
a lot
die
of you
off.
Don't, if a lot of them die.
Really
lowers the demand.
But, and there, for those who try to debate these things at an ideological level, philosophical level, that's all well and good. But I think Nikki's exactly right. When you have something as clear-cut as this, where this is the kind of stuff you can make commercials over.
Well,
much more easily. So when you say, here's some kid or some elderly person who can't get afford insulin anymore, all of a sudden, even those who would theoretically, I think, Hoosiers who would say, you know, this is
the government,
all of a sudden, if Aunt Betty can't get my drugs, then I'm mad.
We keep asking, are any of these things that we keep talking about going to hurt Todd Young or Mike Braun at the polls? And I agree with Nikki. I think Todd Young's got a pretty good hold on his election. Anything can happen. Mike Braun, in a presidential election year, you never know. That's a long way away, but these things keep coming up, particularly with Mike Braun. At some point, if you're Mike Braun, do you have to worry about any of this stuff?
Well, first of all, these guys didn't vote against the Insulin Price Reduction Act of 2022, all right? So, like, let's start with
that makes a difference, too.
Here.
But they voted
against
an $800 billion
tax amendment.
That was a specific amendment.
That was a specific.
It wasn't about their votes on the bill.
Right.
It was about a vote on a specific
amendment. To take something out of the bill.
You squirrel it in there, and 90 days before an election, now they get to go, you know, run ads on it. Here we are.
We're going to talk a lot more about the broader bill as in future weeks.
That was the vote. It was against an $800 billion tax increase.
Oh,
and
no,
subsidies for electric cars.
It actually reduced the deficit.
It was already
$800 million of it did.
It was already in the bill and they voted.
And they voted to take it out. It was a clear yes.
Yeah, sometimes it's a
hard one. The other thing I want to make a point on that.
The
$35 cap is very important to people on insulin, but the $2,000 cap on prescription drugs for the elderly and the ability to negotiate on those prices is every bit as important, and that affects a much wider spectrum of voters.
It's huge.
Yeah, well, and motivated voters. I mean, they're Medicare
recipients,
right? So, yeah.
All right. Former President Donald Trump said this week that FBI agents had searched his Mar-a-Lago club and residence in Palm Beach, Florida, and opened his safe. Eric Trump, the former president's son, said Monday night that he was told the search was related to the possible mishandling of government secrets the Justice Department is known to be investigating after the National Archives retrieved White House records from Mar-a-Lago. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Department of Justice has asked a federal court in Florida to unseal the search warrant, as well as a property receipt for what was taken. Garland did not provide any further details about the nature of the search or other DOJ matters, but he said more information would be made available. John Schwanes, Mike said on the show recently that Donald Trump represents a wild card in the 2022 elections regarding whether or not he'll announce another presidential run before or after ballots are cast this fall. So how does this latest development weigh on 2022?
No logical way. I mean, in a normal, non-bizarro world, I would have said that this is damaging to him. Because, you know, I'm a believer in the way that the process, I mean, can you imagine the judge or magistrate in this case, how carefully, never mind Merrick Garland,
this is not
the wild, wild west.
And they had asked for it.
Right. So,
they
I mean, the whole notion is ludicrous that this was somehow, you know, vigilante justice. So let's put that off the table.
Well,
you would think that when you have people showing up with badges to collect evidence, that would be a hit in the old days. But now you have people rallying around him. So that's why I say it's bizarro.
But it's also the conversation this week from people who were trying to defend Donald Trump has gone from there's clearly no evidence of wrongdoing. How dare they raid? This is purely politically motivated. To as more information is coming out, well, I'm sure that there's probably not actually documents there. To, well, it's fine if there were nuclear documents there. I'm sure they weren't. I'm sure they weren't important.
The shame of it is,
we could give them to Putin or another friend.
That's irresponsibility. I mean, so that is so irresponsible to say that our justice system, which worked the way it was supposed to work, is somehow flawed. That's just
let me say this very irresponsible. We have very little time left. Let me ask you this, which is, how does this play in 2022? Does this perhaps motivate Donald Trump to announce his run sooner?
I think it would motivate him to announce it sooner, and I bet the rest of his party is really hoping it doesn't.
That's what this has done. We were on a track where Trump was thawing. All the data was showing that. As we got further and further, as the January 6th hearings went on, he was thawing with the base. And this just locked him right back in.
Which is crazy, because within minutes of him tweeting that, it was all these sitting Republican elected officials.
His face looks like too much.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.